This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington, D.C. Neil Conan is on assignment. It's been an anxious week for parents after Sung Hui Cho killed 32 people at Virginia Tech on Monday. The news is everywhere on every medium, prompting many parents to simply turn off the TV or flip the newspaper to the comics page. Even parents who encourage questions about the tragedy are hard-pressed to explain the deaths of so many, so young, and at school. Talking to children about this kind of violence, violence occurring in their sphere, is difficult to say the least. This hour, we're going to try to navigate this kind of conversation from the youngest children all the way to high schoolers who might have been anxious to go to college and now have very different anxieties. Later in the hour, we'll examine a new documentary about the Islamist group, the Muslim Brotherhood. Is it a covert radical organization or a moderate group that may help advance the dialogue of peace? But first, talking to kids about violence. We'd like to hear from you. Have you discussed the shootings at Virginia Tech with your high schooler, tween, or even your toddler? Have you addressed it directly or punted until another time? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. It's Thursday, which means Amy Dickinson is here with us. She joins us every other week to help answer these kinds of questions. Amy writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us from our Chicago Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Rebecca. Thank you.
Amy, I understand you have a daughter who's about to go to college. What sorts of conversations have you been having with her?
Well, we've been for the last 18 months, we've been doing nothing but touring colleges. And, you know, the images of this campus and what a beautiful place it is. But the images of these campuses, of this particular campus with these kids streaming out and crying and the cops on the campus, it has been really challenging, really challenging. And she and I just yesterday talked about one of the things we did was talk about the strategy, frankly, that some of these surviving wounded students used to save some lives. I mean, I've been trying to focus on some of the positive,
more heroic stories.
Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible. My daughter, like these kids at this college, Columbine happened when they were in middle school. I have a theory that that these students at Virginia Tech picked up some strategy from the Columbine story in that, you know, human nature is to run. But what did they do? They barricaded themselves in, which was so smart because they suspected that this gunman might come back, which, of course, he did, because this is what happened at Columbine. So I think that there are some things that happened that were a result of, you know, our children are growing up in such a strange and violent time, and they have learned some things from this.
Have you been getting a lot of letters on this to the Ask Amy column?
Yeah, people are completely confused. I think very sad. I think there's this sense of sadness and depression that people don't know how to process it. They don't know how to talk about it, and yet they want to.
And so what sort of things are people asking? How are they sort of voicing that inability to talk about it?
Well, I think everybody wants to know how to help their children process this kind of news without making them afraid, without making them fearful, without, you know, alarming them too much, but they do want to find ways to talk about it.
And have you found that it's different depending on the age of the kid? I mean, we talked about your almost college-age child who may have to, you know, face all of the fears of going off somewhere on her own in addition to this. And then there's sort of middle school kids who certainly can't not know about it. It's everywhere, but maybe don't necessarily relate it to themselves.
Well, one, you know, the first choice you need to make is, should you talk about it? And I think with middle school kids, my point of view is that they do know about this, even if they haven't consumed the news at your house. They're hearing it in gym class. These kids have devices which stream in news and information all the time, and so they do know about it. So in the case of middle schoolers, I would actually ask them if they know about it, if so, what they think happened, and just ask them what they know, and you know, ask them open-ended questions, and let them answer and listen.
And younger kids, I mean, I have to admit I'm one of those parents who has been flipping over the newspaper to the less terrifying image on the front of it and have just avoided the topic altogether.
Well, depending on the age of the kids, I think that's absolutely the right thing to do. With preschoolers and primary school kids, I think that's very wise. You want to limit their screen time, but you should also be aware that they may be hearing things at school. Even in preschool, kids, you know, they pick up little snippets. Their parents are listening to the news as they're driving them to school. And sometimes they develop, you know, weird little ideas of what's going on. And I think it's a great idea to talk to your child's teacher to see if the kids are aware of this at school. And if they are, you want to ask them how they feel, like what do they think happened and how they feel. You know, with young children, I actually think that there's a potential here for a lesson about gun violence. You know, one way to explain it to a young child would be to say that this man hurt a lot of people with a gun and that people are very sad about it. Because I don't know about you, I've been feeling very, very sad and kind of tearful. And if you are upset yourself, you're going to need to tell your children why you're feeling the way you do. And do you say, I'm really worried that this is going to happen to you? No, don't say that. What you say is, I feel really sad about this and really sad for these people. And I'm really concerned. And one of the lessons you can help a younger child learn is, you know, guns are very, very dangerous. What do you think you should do if you saw a gun? Would you touch it? No, you would not. You know, you would run away and tell someone. Because unfortunately for me, I've covered a lot of gun-related stories in my career. And one of them was the Million Mom March years ago. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed parents whose children had, you know, died of accidental shootings, and these were all a result of a child finding a gun and picking it up. So this is, you know, you can turn these things into little lessons if it comes up, if the topic is coming up.
I'm also joined by Dr. Adelaide Robb. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. She's here in Studio 3A. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
She can help us with some expert advice on how to assuage children's fears, our own fears about talking with them about events like these. Dr. Robb, when you're talking to a child about these events, what is the goal? What is sort of the ultimate outcome you want from probably an ongoing series of conversations about something this complex?
Well, I think the first thing you need to find out is what's the age of the child and the developmental level of the child. So you might have an 8-year-old who's very smart and actually reads the newspaper every day or goes on the website and looks at NPR or TOP. If you sign on, for instance, to Comcast, the Comcast sign-on page has the headlines from the news. So even if you're going on Comcast to get your emails, you're already seeing, here, click here to see a video of what this man did when he killed people. And there are very few TV stations that don't play all the news. So if you've got that 5-year-old kindergartner, you really want to leave them on the Disney Channel and Cartoon Network and not turn the other channels on. We had the same issue here in Washington when we had the sniper shootings and when we had 9/11 and the Pentagon was hit. And we have a whole generation of kids, if you will, that were inundated with images of violence and death. And this is just another one. Working in our Northern Virginia office, what I did on Tuesday is, as I checked in with all my clinic patients, I said, did you know anyone there? Have you heard from your friends? Are you going there next year for school? Do you have any concerns about going to college in Virginia? Because many of our people go to school there or have family members or parents or friends who were seniors the year before who've graduated. And it was just nice for them to be able to talk to me about it. When we had 9/11, what they all thought as people were disappearing from the classroom because of the Pentagon, they thought it was Columbine again because kids in middle school were getting called to the office and not returning to the classroom. Mm. And that was very scary for them because kids were disappearing. And the only thing they had in their knowledge before 9/11 of kids going to the office and disappearing was Columbine. So I think once you're into middle school, you need to give an explanation about what's happening, but also to ask the child, what's your understanding of what's going on?
Because the lack of information can be scarier than anything.
Right, because they probably think, I mean, there's some kids who are younger who think if you go to college, you're going to be shot. That's what happens when you go to college.
Let's take a call from Alex in Lawrence, Kansas. Alex, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me. I have an 11-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and my 11-year-old just returned from a trip to New York to see all this stuff on the news, and her questions and concerns were, you know, Daddy, am I going to have to deal with that when I go to high school and to college? She's very loving and emotional and compassionate and was very saddened by, you know, things that were said and seen on TV, only to be followed by this morning a bomb threat on the Lawrence school system. So kind of my question is, maybe to the experts are, you know, how do I deal with this when she gets home today from school in regards to, am I safe at school when this is going on in Virginia at a college level? She's in fifth grade, and today all the school systems, you know, half the kids were brought home by their parents. The other half of the parents, being me one of, said, you know, I trust that the school system has locked the doors down on all the schools, and, you know, unless I feel she's in danger, I'm not going to go in and rush her out of the classroom and make a bigger deal out of it than it really is.
Alex, I'm going to ask you to hang on. We're going to get an answer to your question after this quick break. We do need to take a break. We're talking about the shootings at Virginia Tech this week and how to address them with your kids. After the break, the superintendent of public schools near Virginia Tech will join us and talk to us about how they're explaining the tragedy to their students. And more of your calls at 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is on assignment. News of Monday's shooting at Virginia Tech is hard to avoid. It's in papers, TV, and obviously on the radio. For parents, it can be hard to explain what happened and why. And today we're talking about how to discuss violence with your kids. Amy Dickinson is with us. She writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. Also, Dr. Adelaide Robb, a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Children's National Medical Center here in Washington, D.C. If you've discussed the shootings with your kids, how did you handle it? Or did you avoid the conversation, at least for now? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Or send us email, talk@npr.org. Also, check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Alex is on the line from Lawrence, Kansas. He's got an 11-year-old who is trying to process all of this information about Virginia Tech, but also concerned about her own safety. Is she secure? Adelaide Robb, what's your advice for Alex?
Well, my advice is, first, it's great that your daughter can talk to you when she's worried or concerned. That's the most important thing. Secondly, you need to let her know, as you have, that the school is there to keep her safe. But also, if she hears kids talking about bad stuff, like somebody says, I brought a gun to school, or I have a knife in my backpack, that it's okay in this case to go ahead and tell a teacher or the principal or the counselor when you're worried that somebody else is behaving badly and you think they might not be safe. Because that's one of the most important things. What we saw in Columbine is many kids were concerned about those two children's behavior, and no one came forward and talked to authorities. In Virginia, where we had this guy, people did talk to the authorities, and then we ran into the difficulty with the laws for commitment, and we couldn't go farther than we did. But contact was made with mental health care and people in charge at the school so that the kids who were disturbed could at least get some help.
Alex, has your daughter's school set up any sort of formal forum for them to talk about it?
Not to the best of my knowledge. I don't think that they have. Like I said, she was out of school on Monday. She had gone to New York with a traveling choir to sing, you know, came home happy about that, then started asking questions about the Virginia Tech. Am I going to be safe? You know, and then, like I said, this morning there was a bomb threat. They locked all the schools in Lawrence, and you know, I was comfortable with the fact that they had taken the action to lock all the doors. It was simply a phoned-in threat. neighbors with children in her class call me to say, have you gone to get your daughter, you know? And my response was, no, I think that the school system is going to do what they need to do to keep her safe. I called the school. They said, you know, we're taking necessary precautions, and I didn't add panic to a situation that didn't warrant the panic. But I just, you know, I don't know, moving forward. My mom called me from New Mexico 2 days ago and said, I've had an idea. You need to get your kids out of the public school system and homeschool them. It's just not safe to be in school anymore. And, you know, you think the number of schools across the country and the number of days that they go that things like this don't happen, I think the school system is relatively safe. But, you know, 11 years old is a very impressionable age. And when she asked me a question, am I going to be safe when I go to high school and to college, you want to be able to tell them yes, and in the back of the mind, you're quite concerned about the way things are going. And my day in high school, you know, it was a fist fight behind the gym. There were no knives, no guns. You know, we settled it that way. But these days and times with the children and the mindset that they have, it you just don't know.
Can I weigh in for Alex?
Yeah.
You know, your daughter's 11, and you say she's very, very sensitive. And I think it's important to let her express what she's thinking. And one way to do that, because kids are so compassionate, like they really understand sadness. And if she is particularly sensitive, you can ask her, well, would you like to write a letter to Virginia Tech? Maybe you'd like to send them a letter telling them you're thinking about them. Like, allow her to sort of process what she's thinking about that. And the answer in terms of when your kids ask you, will I be safe, the answer should always be yes. They need to know that the adults in charge are keeping them safe. Like, that's what they need to know.
Sure.
Alex, thank you so much for your call. Let's hear from Gwen in Holland, Michigan. Gwen, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello?
Hi, Gwen. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just talking with, I have four school-age children. The oldest is 11, and the youngest is in preschool, and they all recently had lockdown drills, including the preschooler. And she told us about it, and they went behind, you know, where they couldn't be seen from the door, and they went by the sink, and they played the quiet game. And she was, you know, very upfront and giggly about it. And my first grader, too, you know, they went against the wall and hid under their coats, and I can just imagine a wall full of first graders all giggling underneath their coats.
This was in response to Virginia Tech?
No, this was, I think, they have been doing this since the beginning of the school year. I think it's in response to the general, the way things are going. And hers just happened to be, my youngest just happened to be quite recent.
Well, what do you think of that?
It makes me very sad. You know, the same sort of comments that Alex was making. I grew up with tornado drills, you know, and but that was something completely different.
I grew up with nuclear holocaust drills.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. But it's not someone walking down the halls who could come in and hurt you.
But, you know, I think it's a good idea to focus on, you know, the aspects of this that are sort of empowering. Like, these kids are being given knowledge, like, here's what you can do. And, you know, in this most recent case, some of the survivors, that is what they did.
Yeah.
So I think that it's good to have lessons, and as long as, I'd rather have them giggling than scared, you know.
Oh, I agree.
Gwen, thank you so much for your call. Tiffany Anderson is the superintendent of Montgomery County Public Schools in Virginia, where the shootings occurred. She joins us from Virginia Tech Radio Production Studio in Blacksburg. Tiffany Anderson, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
How are you? How is your community holding up?
Well, it certainly has been a difficult week. Out of the 33 deaths, 15 or more have been associated with our schools. Several parents have died. We have a number of volunteers in our school that were killed on Monday. Additionally, we have some of our former students that graduated last year. So it's certainly been a very difficult week for everyone.
We were talking earlier about questions from kids, you know, elsewhere in the country who say, am I safe? And parents, you know, shouldn't hesitate to say, of course you're safe. The adults in your life will protect you. That must be different in your world where the shootings were so much closer.
Oh, absolutely. We have pulled our counselors together. We had a work day yesterday. School is still canceled for us. We will return on Monday. But we really talked about what kinds of conversations we're going to have with our students. How are we going to prepare to support our staff members, many of whom have friends that were lost or injured. So it's been a little bit of a different conversation in that regard. The last memory that our students have is of the lockdown on Monday. We had a lockdown that began around 8:45 or so. And given we were limited in the details that we were receiving, I just had all schools locked down, and they stayed locked down for most of the day. So that's their last real memory of school at this point.
And what are you telling parents to help their children?
Well, we've done a number of things, and we've posted some resources on our website as well, on our school district's website. But we've been giving two or three communications throughout the day of each day this week, one of which really spelled out some conversations they can begin having. We've asked parents to really, no matter whether they are preschool or in high school, one, to limit the television watching, to try to limit that. Also to monitor their own conversations with other adults in regards to the tragedy that happened at Virginia Tech. We've also asked them to monitor their own students' behaviors. Not all students will express how they feel, and they really need to monitor their routines that their child has, see if there's a change in appetite or other items such as that. We've given them the resources. We've suggested that rather than being presumptuous and beginning a conversation about what they think their student or their child may want to know more information about, to really allow their child to help guide that conversation and to meet them where they are. Most importantly, assuring their child that they are safe. We've asked our teachers to do the same, so many of these same suggestions have been given to staff members as well. To assure children that they're safe, to talk about what resources we have in place at school and how we are keeping them safe. Those are some of the general things that we've shared with parents in addition to teachers.
And Dr. Robb, if a child is either very young or has trouble expressing themselves and is clearly agitated but not necessarily vocal about why they're agitated, how much do you push it to sort of get them to express their feelings, and how much do you not open up something that might be painful?
Well, I think that you never push somebody who's not in a therapeutic relationship with a professional harder than they want. Sometimes what kids will do, and I remember this from my own children being in elementary school after 9/11, is they can draw pictures. And that's another way to get some of the feelings out without a vocabulary to express their fears. And after 9/11, a lot of the kids in my children's school drew pictures of airplanes crashing into buildings and people falling out of it because that's what they saw on the news. So there may be children who start to draw pictures of guns and kids being shot. If your child is scared to go to school and you have a kindergartner or a first grader and you need to spend a little bit more time dropping them off that first day back, as some of the kids in Montgomery County might be struggling with, school should be a little bit flexible about allowing parents to volunteer in the classroom for the morning to make the transition back easier, because I bet there's going to be a lot of scared children after a week off of school with the last day being a lockdown. The other thing is that the American Academy of Child Psychiatry at www.aacap.org has a list of facts for families that's in English, Spanish, French, Chinese, and a couple of other languages, with two-page handouts on things like talking about violence to your children that are very nice for parents to get off the internet and hand out. We also have a website at our hospital at dcchildrens.org that has information about trauma and violence through our Institute to Heal Our Children, which is specifically around trauma, and that's another resource for people to go to.
That's Dr. Adelaide Robb. We're also joined by Amy Dickinson of the Ask Amy column, and also here is Tiffany Anderson. She is the superintendent of Montgomery County Public Schools in Virginia. And Tiffany Anderson, I'm sure you have plenty to do, so thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
She joined us from the Virginia Tech Radio Production Studio in Blacksburg, Virginia. Let's take a call. This is Sherry in Sarasota, Florida. Sherry, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'm actually a high school teacher,
And today and yesterday, I thought it was really important just to open up some dialogue, especially I find kids have a lot of myths going on around varieties of things. Like some of my students didn't know the shooter was dead, for instance. So it was extremely important to sort of clarify the myths and talk about what was really happening. And certainly we discussed if they, you know, feeling safe in our school. We do have lockdown. All our rooms have to be locked, you know, during class time. And allowing them to express what they're feeling. And I think the interesting part to understand, especially about the high schoolers and kids who are maybe more used to violence, I do have students that have violence within their neighborhoods as well, their behavior changes. And to take note of, I think teachers need to be aware of different kinds of behavior changes that can occur. Maybe you can they can talk about that.
Sherry, thanks for your call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Adelaide Robb, to that question of behavior changes, are there ways that this anxiety might show up?
Kids may start having trouble handing in homework assignments. So you may have somebody that's been an A student in your honors English class in the 11th grade, and all of a sudden he's not handing in his papers, or they start skipping class, or they change their appearance, or they fall asleep in school. There are all kinds of changes in behavior, or start fighting with classmates when it's never been an argumentative or combative child. I think one of the most important things is teachers are a big conduit to asking for help. And it was the teachers at Blacksburg that actually noticed the kid was acting abnormally long before anyone else did. And you see things about the kid, their writings and their feelings that come in on homework assignments that parents never get to see. And I think the thing for teachers is to be willing to say, I'm concerned, which is always hard saying that to a parent or a child. But go ahead and go up your chain of command, whether that's going to the head of your department or your principal or to the child's parents. If you're worried about something, ask for help.
We have email from Warren in St. Louis who says, might this be an opportunity to explain to children the toll bullying and isolation of other kids might have in the long term, and to put it in a more positive light, how reaching out to kids who are shy, seemingly lonely, and depressed might have a very positive change on the life of the lonely student as well as the child who's reaching out. Amy Dickinson?
You know, I'm not crazy about that idea, honestly, because person was mentally ill. I hate the idea that of putting this burden on kids that they can change someone else. I think that's a lot to ask of a kid. What you should ask of we should all ask of our children is to always be kind, always be inclusive. But the idea, placing the idea in a kid's head that you can save another person, change another person, it's just a little bit dicey. Dr. Robb, what do you think?
I think you're right that you can't ask a friend to be their own therapist. And we'll see a lot of times when a teenager is suicidal and they tell their best friend they want to kill themselves and the best friend feels responsible if something bad happens. You can't ask kids to do that. But if they notice that somebody's acting abnormal, they should ask for help. The other thing that I think you made a great point about, Amy, is this kid was mentally ill. And one of the things we have to do as mental health professionals is when we have our high school seniors going off to college, we need to pass that baton. We need to make sure where our patient is going, they have a psychiatrist or a therapist already set up before they matriculate. Because what happens is they go off to college, the transition is not made to a new care provider, and all of a sudden they're halfway through the semester, they ran out of their medicine, things are falling apart, and that's when something bad happens. So as mental health care becomes better for kids in childhood and adolescence, and our patients are able to go to college, we need to make sure they continue in treatment and they succeed when they go to college instead of yanking the net out from underneath them.
That's Dr. Adelaide Robb, a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Children's National Medical Center here in Washington, D.C. She joined us here in 3A. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Amy Dickinson, part of our regular Ask Amy segment every other Thursday. Her syndicated advice column is published by the Chicago Tribune. She joined us from our Chicago Bureau. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, Rebecca.
When we come back from a short break, Newsweek's Michael Isikoff joins us. His documentary on the Muslim Brotherhood is the finale to this week's series of films on PBS dealing with the challenges we face in a post-9/11 world. We'll talk with him about the Brotherhood and take your calls, 800-989-TALK, or email talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.